Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing bricked phones, shadow inflation, and earning more without a degree.
That's right, Joel. This is our Friday flight where every Friday we tackle some of the headlines that we've come across in the news and how they pertain to our money. First, we've got a quick tip for folks, though. Supercook is a website that we came across. So this obviously pertains to food, but this is a great site to figure out what to do with, say, like that last can of beans in the pantry, or maybe the frozen broccoli and frozen ground beef in the freezer. Because when it's getting towards the end of the month and you're really sticking to the budget, you don't necessarily want to go to the grocery store and break the seal, essentially, right? You want to be able to utilize every single thing, but at the end of a long day.
It's like the worst dipping into next month's budget on the 29th, you know?
Oh, dude, absolutely the worst, yeah. But a lot of times we just don't have the creativity at the end of the day to think through, okay, what, you know, could I actually do with these ingredients? And this is a really cool site. You get to input what things you have, and they basically spit out a bunch of different recipes, and you can sort it by the type of meal that you're looking to create, whether you're looking to make like dinner or lunch or even just a side. So we would recommend that you check it out. It's supercook.com.
All right, Matt, I've got a can of beans and a box of saltine crackers. What do I make?
I'm not MacGyver. But luckily, Supercook basically is, it's like the MacGyver of recipes.
Okay, all right, good to know. Supercook.
Kate had actually been checking it out too. So I can say that it is home cook tested, at least in our household.
There you go. Well, I think that is just, it is helpful because it, like we said, it is easy to try to dip into next month's budget too early. And if we're trying to make our dollars go the furthest, something as simple as using the food that we have on hand is one of those really, really important ways, because food is such a large line item in most of our budgets.
Every single month, man.
Yeah, to make sure that we're not busting our budget. And especially with food prices going up, it's one of those things where it's like, we want to use all of it, right? We want to use everything at our disposal. And there aren't many worse feelings than throwing away what was perfectly good food. Because you just kind of got lazy.
And that's true.
I've been there. I've done that. And yeah, I'm going to check this out. But on that note, Matt, let's get to the Friday flight, a quick sampling of stories we found interesting this week and how they pertain to your money. And it is a good thing that there are resources like Supercook out there, because all of us are going to have to work harder to stretch our grocery budgets more because prices are on the rise. Data from last week reveals that inflation is sticking around, at least for now. There was this debate for months about whether inflation was transitory or whether it was here to stay. Companies are even warning right now that prices are going to continue to rise. Gas, rent, and bacon all cost more these days. A lot of items at the grocery store are really starting to tick up in price.
That's right.
And there's just been this talk whether inflation is here for a limited time only, whether it's transitory, or whether we're going to see sustained rates of inflation for years to come. And how long this inflation trend continues at this rapid clip, it remains to be seen. But it's certainly stickier than many assumed it would be, you and I included, because a couple of months ago, I think you and I kind of called the top. We thought, hey, inflation's going to start trending back downward now. And I think we were wrong.
That is true. I think we believed it was going to be a lot more temporary than it's proven to be. And so we're talking about inflation and specifically food manufacturers. They are also raising their prices. You mentioned bacon, Joel.
Much to my chagrin, personally.
when the cost of inputs for food manufacturers have gone up, they can only eat so much of that cost before it gets passed along to us. The Wall Street Journal, they reported that historically, consumers will put up with some higher costs, but that once prices are more than 5% higher, that basically consumers are going to begin to change their buying habits. And honestly, we think that this is a great thing because regardless of what you're buying, you should be price sensitive, even with your splurge purchase. Like in our case, craft beer, we talked about you walking away from a 4-pack of a very expensive beer. Even with those splurges, we need to be price sensitive. And so maybe, you know, Joel, maybe last year you're having bacon every single Saturday morning.
How did you know?
But now, like, it might be time to switch, you know, switch it to more of a monthly splurge rather than a weekly thing. And so it's just a good time to reconsider some of your own shopping habits and even to address your brand loyalty. You might have a few brands that you always always go to because you're like, oh, no, they're the best. Well, are they really the best? Is it worth continuing to pay, you know, the same price or even higher prices now in order to maintain that same quality of living? Maybe there's a way that you can get exactly what you've been getting, but just for a cheaper price. This is a good time for us to maybe bring up Aldi. I'm a professed fanboy of Aldi. I'm thinking about getting it tattooed on my knuckles, Joel.
Oh, you should.
Maybe Aldi on one side and Lidl on the other, even though, yeah, four letters. It would fit on each hand. But
go,
I actually haven't been to a Lidl. But in either case, if you have not stepped foot, at least in an Aldi, you are missing out on the opportunity to save a ton of money every single month.
Well, fortunately, there's a Lidl going in right around the corner from our house.
Can't wait.
And it should be open, I don't know, in the next 6 months, hopefully. But that's a good point, Matt. I think what you mentioned about substitution, that's really, really important when it comes to our budget. Buying things on sale when we can, but then substituting things. So let's say beef prices are up, but chicken prices have remained pretty stable. You eat more chicken, or you're eating less meat altogether, right? That's a big way that there are people in the Facebook group actually talking about it this week, and they're saying, yeah, basically cutting out meat is a huge way to trim your budget quickly in the grocery aisle, which is very true.
Well, going back to the bacon, I mean, we often use bacon not as a like a meat, like a protein, but almost like a garnish, right? And so if you're just having a frittata, just like a little bit of bacon sprinkled on top instead of like four fat slab, you know, slices of bacon on the side.
Yeah, that's true. It's healthier to do it that way too. But the thing is, Matt, this nagging inflation isn't just leading to increased prices. Sure, yeah, some of your prices at the grocery store have gone up. We all know what's happened to used car prices over the course of the past year. But this inflation is also causing much higher levels of inconvenience. Shipping delays and products being in short supply are, of course, a part of that. You know, Matt, we're still working on our home renovation, Emily and I, and we're definitely bumping into some issues.
See some more of those?
Yeah, some of the cabinet supply issues or tile. It's like, you're going to have to choose some new tile because that ran out, and we're still waiting to get more in. And the New York Times actually just wrote an article about something they're calling shadow inflation. And it's detailing essentially how companies are cutting back on things like customer service and some of the other conveniences that they offer. Basically, if you're waiting longer on hold, it's probably largely because inflation has impacted the job market in a big way.
Hmm. And so first, two things real quick. I love that it's called shadow inflation because it makes me think of like a spy movie. It makes me think of like espionage. But secondly, this is a lot like shrinkflation, which we've talked about. Instead of the price of a product going up, they've just decreased the quality, or maybe not the quality, but the quantity of what you receive.
That's right. And, this is more decreasing the quality, though, of like the goods and services.
Or the number of people who are able to even work. And so we're seeing this like shrinkflation effect the actual labor market and services provided, and thus shadow inflation.
Exactly.
I love that term.
And let's say you got in a car wreck. The part you need is potentially delayed. Some people have confessed to waiting months on a part for a car to come in, and so they're driving an overpriced rental car, of course.
Highly inconvenient.
For the time being. Hopefully that's being picked up by your insurance company. But the same is true, let's say, if you need your appliance needs to be repaired. Basically, inflation is impacting almost every area of our lives right now, and it's specifically causing higher levels of inconvenience for everyone, including everyone with kids.
That's right. Yeah, the Washington Post, they recently ran a story about the current childcare crisis that's happening right now. There are still a lot of women absent from the workforce, many of whom typically fill these roles. And as more parents are attempting to return to the office, they're just having trouble finding spots for their kids. We've actually been lucky. Our youngest, our 2-year-old son, the director there at that school hasn't had any problems staffing. But that's something that y'all have even seen where you take Ezzy, right?
Yeah, turnover already in his teachers early in the school year. Trying to find a replacement was really difficult. So this is definitely something we're seeing at childcare centers across the country.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I saw that some childcare centers, like they're even reducing their hours or have even closed completely. They're just shutting their doors. And stats show that the lack of childcare employees is actually worse than it is in restaurants right now. And we've all seen how, you know, bad that's actually gotten.
Right.
And so part of that is because of the, you know, the pay is not so great in that industry. But we mention this because if you get called back into the office, there's going to be a decent chance that you won't even be able to find childcare right now. And that reality continues to just to have an impact on what life for parents specifically is going to look like on a day-to-day basis and on workforce participation rates. It's something that you need to be thinking about, hopefully, before you get that call to head back into the office.
And let's say there's no childcare for your kid. I guess one option is to quit your job and stay home with the kid if you want. that's what actually a lot of folks are doing, not necessarily to stay home with their kids, but just quitting in general, right? The great resignation, as it's been called, it's continuing. And actually, August was a record-breaking month when it comes to quitting work. 4.3 million Americans decided that it was time to say peace out to their current employer. And there's actually this new survey this week from Prudential, and it showed that 5 in 10 workers are actively looking or are about to start looking for a new job. And I don't know why I said 5 in 10. You could say 1 in 2, right? Like, that's fraction simplification right there. And millennials, as it turns out, they land even more squarely in the I'm about to quit camp, because they're seeing the headlines about wage increases, and it turns out they are scouring the job boards in order to increase their pay or in an attempt to get better benefits. And so here's the thing. If you love your job, we would say, don't quit. There are ways to make more money and to stay put, if that's what you really want to do, if you're not looking to move on to greener pastures. You know, our friend Jesse actually recently wrote about his experience doing just that on his site, Best Interest. It was a really good article about how he was able to negotiate a really big pay bump, even when he was initially told no. We'll put a link to that one in the show notes so that you can check it out.
Yes, we will. This also makes me think of the two sides kind of the proverbial YOLO coin, right?
It's very similar to Dogecoin.
It's worth just as much. If, let's say you've got cash on hand to support quitting your job, and maybe you're just plain done with doing that work, we feel that it's okay to quit, even if you don't have another job locked down, right? And so we're all about the YOLO mindset that prioritizes working less or even, you know, quitting your job altogether, as long as you're in the financial position to do so. But, and here's the other side of the coin, right? We're always against the YOLO mindset when it comes to just buying crap, when it comes to consumption. So here's a helpful way to view the job market, Joel, as we've been talking about it. You know, the fact that so many folks are quitting, that means that wages are rising. They're rising fast, and that employers are sweetening the pot because of how desperately they need workers. Some businesses are actually reporting that 90% of candidates who schedule interviews aren't even bothering to show up. And so for a lot of positions, if you have a pulse, you're going to get hired. And on the other hand, too, like, this is a tough spot for managers and teams who are trying to maintain their staff or, you know, God forbid, even ramp up. I couldn't imagine trying to do that right now. But the Great Resignation is the perfect time for everyone else out there to maybe make a lateral move, maybe to earn more, even transition to a company that's going to offer you superior perks if you're so inclined. If you're thinking about leaving anyway, now might be a great time to take advantage of the current labor market.
Agreed. Sometimes the best opportunities for us as individuals appear when we least expect them. And this is just one of those times where you never know. If you start putting out some feelers, if you start looking at some of the job sites, if you start emailing some of the folks in your network and telling them that you're kind of interested, you're looking around, you might find something falls into your lap that's way better than you assumed. And right now is just a great time to be curious when it comes to your career.
That's right. But that's enough about some super nerdy inflation talk. I feel like we spent a lot of time talking about that. We're going to talk about a variety of topics here coming up, including like planned obsolescence and just some of the jobs that you can take on that don't require a college degree but pay really well. We'll get to all of that right after this break.
All right, we're back. Let's keep this Friday flight rolling. Now it's time for, of course, the ludicrous headline of the week. Where,
which, by the way, Elon Musk never jumped on the jumped on the opportunity that we dangled in front of him.
It was worth a shot
to sponsor the ludicrous headline of the week. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he's just got a backlog of tweets he's got to get back to.
He's just busy. I'm
next
sure.
Next week is my guess.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt.
But the ludicrous headline of the week, of course, is a chance for us to spot a headline from around the internet this week that has to do with money and to kind of pick it apart because it's got a little bit of insanity going on. And this headline was from Bloomberg. It said, supply chain crisis is bad for iPhones, great for gift cards. And it turns out that gift cards are likely to make a bigger splash. They're going to be a bigger gift this holiday season for a lot of folks. Roughly 40% of overall holiday spending is expected to be spent on gift cards.
That is mind-blowing.
Like, I know, right?
Like, that is so much plastic being exchanged from one person to another.
That's $4 and $10, or 2 and 5, as some would say.
Make it a lot easier to understand.
Right, yeah. But we would say this isn't a good thing that that many dollars are flowing towards the gift card market. And the reason for that is, did you know that almost $3 billion in money that went on gift cards went unused in 2019? $3 billion. And so when you give a gift card, there's a really, really good chance that even if the recipient loves that store or restaurant, that that gift card ends up in a drawer and it ends up going unspent. And so it might seem more thoughtful to get someone a gift card, but it often ends up being wasteful. A lot of those gift cards, even if you know the person well and you know they love that place, sometimes that gift card gets forgotten and the money goes unused. And that is what we hate to see. That's why we hate to see gift card spending just like skyrocketing. Yeah.
Basically, it just adds another step of friction. And so instead of actually having cash to go to whatever restaurant you want, you have to remember to grab the gift card out of the drawer.
I've forgotten gift cards so many times.
So many times.
And then I punch myself in the face afterwards.
And you truly do need to be incredibly methodical, incredibly organized. And here's the thing. I feel that I would describe myself as being incredibly methodical and like a robot. I try to devoid myself of any emotions, right? But even still, I also forget. Of course, there are certain places we go that we're excited to go to, but it's always those gift cards to places that you don't normally go to, and you don't think about it when it's time to, say, go grab coffee with a friend. You don't think about going to the coffee shop where you have the gift card, because that's not normally a place that I would go to anyway.
Yeah.
Actually, maybe I should make it a point to burn through some of those cards by the end of the year just to make sure I don't end up as part of those stats.
No, that's the thing. I mean, that's a good reminder when we hear a story like this and we're like, yeah, gift cards, actually, a lot of them go wasted.
Pull them out of the drawer.
Exactly.
Set them on the counter, because that's another thing too,
you
right?
You don't want to be that $3 billion stat.
When it's out of sight, it's out of mind. And when it's tucked away in that drawer, underneath the papers, wrapped with, in our case, there's a rubber band around it.
We've got ours in a Ziploc bag.
Do you really? Yeah. You just don't think about it. And we need to be thinking about redeeming that money more than we are. There is actually this economics professor who was quoted in that Bloomberg article who called it crass to give cash. And we kind of touched on this recently in our money etiquette episode a couple weeks ago, but we strongly disagree. We are big proponents of giving cash over gift cards. Again, why would you trade in something that can be used anywhere in order to force someone to spend it only at a single store? And the big difference here, the way that you make cash not crass or rude, is just to make sure that you write a nice note alongside that cash gift. Because the real reason that cash is seen as rude or like a faux pas is because it can just seem thoughtless. Like, you're not thinking about it. You're just pulling some money out of the wallet, just putting it in an envelope like a rich uncle or that kind of thing. And so we think that there's a thoughtful way to be able to give cash as a gift. But the only time buying a gift card actually makes real sense is if you're able to get a discount on it. Joel, you like to do this with a favorite restaurant locally. Once a year, they'll offer what do they offer?
It's usually like $200 and you get $300 for the gift card.
Okay,
so
yeah.
That's
a fantastic deal.
That's a great incentive to get a gift card. And
that's a place that y'all love going to, so you never forget about it.
Exactly.
It's always on your mind because you want to go there.
Every time we go there, we bring the gift cards because that's kind of the way it goes down. But
that's smart.
If you're shopping at Costco, maybe, I know you, it's not your favorite store, but Costco has discounted gift cards. And so if you're like, oh, great, these are going to be great gifts for someone and I'm going to pay less than full price, I think it can make sense in that context. But if you're just literally handing over $25 to get a $25 Starbucks gift card, don't do it. Give someone that cash instead. Let them make the choice about what they want to do with the money that you've thoughtfully given to them.
I think it's even okay to Venmo or Cash App somebody money. It's just in the memo or where the description is, write a poem.
There you go.
Or something like
a little haiku.
Yeah, but let's be honest, an actual written card that...
It's going to go further.
Having something tangible like that.
That being said, I will put my Venmo handle in the show notes in case anybody wants to thoughtfully send me money. Just kidding. All right, let's move on though, Matt. Let's get to the next story. This one's about planned obsolescence. The new Google Pixel 6 was just announced this week.
You excited about that?
Well, not really. I mean, it looks really nice, but I am personally quite content with my Pixel 4a, which has been a delight.
It's a solid phone.
And it was pretty inexpensive. It was like $350 brand new phone, not too shabby. Hopefully, I'll be holding on to that one for quite a while. But yeah, while I really do like the phones that Google is making, there is one thing about this new release that really irks me. The top-notch, high-dollar phones, the Google Pixel 6 Pro is like $900, and I think the regular Pixel 6 is like $600.
But they're getting up there in that Apple, expensive Apple
iPhone
territory.
They sure are. But it only comes with 3 years of updates. And to me, this is planned obsolescence at its worst. Yeah. Who wants to purchase a $900 device that you know is going to be worthless? It's going to be bricked in just a few years' time. And yeah, people have understandably been keeping their phones longer. Matt, you just finally upgraded.
That's right.
From your super old iPhone SE, what, like 5.5 years old, something like that?
6.
Wow.
They released that thing 6 years ago.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
And that's amazing to get that much time out of a phone, out of something that you're using every single day of your life, basically. But the idea that Google is going to make these phones worthless after just a few years' time is pretty frustrating. And as a current Pixel owner who might not get as much life as he had hoped out of it if those updates stop coming, I mean, I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah.
And it's going to make me reconsider where I get my next phone. I think it's just important for anybody to know. It's crucial to check and see what the security and the support are going to be like for any new phone before you actually make the purchase.
Yeah.
And that could be the deciding factor in which phone you end up getting.
Might it actually be serviced longer, but they're just guaranteeing it for 3 years? Is that what it is?
That's exactly what they say.
They're not saying that like at 3 years, we're going to pull the plug.
No, but apparently
Droid.
Well, what I read on The Verge's website was basically that Google gives this date, and they don't usually go far beyond that.
Okay.
They're not usually hyper generous when it comes to the amount of time they continue to send updates. So could it be receive updates for longer? Yeah, but I'd like to see a better guarantee from Google when they're selling you a $900 device that it's going to be supported for, I would think, a minimum of 5 years would be the right thing to do.
That's right. And I will say, I mean, I'm not going to try to make this an Android versus Apple phone argument here, but the ability to have a device that will likely be able to be supported with security updates and just iOS. I mean, the big iOS update that Apple pushed out last month, yeah, that was available for iPhone 6S, iPhone SE, the one, you know, up until now that I recently had. And I actually read on Macworld, too, that they did performance studies on it because they said, okay, well, certainly it's going to slow down a bunch. And they found that even with the new iOS push out with the update, it did not slow down the phone. And so I found that to be impressive that they're not, you know, Apple already got accused once of slowing down phones once they released the new ones.
Degrading the batteries.
Yeah, like that whole thing. And so I think they're making sure to do right by their customers. And we just talked on Wednesday about how buying Apple stock instead of buying, say, Apple products would have made you quite a bit of money. And so all that to be said, like, we're not suggesting that you forego all modern conveniences and only invest every single dollar that comes in. But it is a definite wake-up call for you to slow down your upgrade cycle instead of looking to the latest and greatest gadgets to maybe think twice about it and think how it is that you could take that money and to put it to perhaps better use. And the best example that we gave from that Wednesday episode, remember, instead of buying a Macintosh in the mid-80s, if instead you had invested that money in Apple, you would be sitting on over $28 million right now. So this is just a quick reminder to make sure that you are upgrading your electronics when you need to, not just because you can, not just because it's an option.
Yeah, and try to prolong that life cycle as long as possible because, yeah, I mean, the upgrades that you're seeing when it comes to new phones, they're pretty incremental. I mean, there have been some strides, but really the difference between an iPhone 11 and an iPhone 13 is pretty minimal. Same with Google Pixel 4 and Pixel 6. It's like, yeah, there's some nicer features, but when it comes down to it, they're minimal. And while we're talking about tech, Matt, supply chain insanity has also impacted the price that people are going to pay if they want to buy a new TV. We're getting close to the time of year when TV purchases tend to make the most sense, price-wise at least, but we're obviously not in normal times. And CNET actually reported that TV prices are at the highest they've been in 9 years. Folks in the industry say that we should be expecting prices that are at least $100 north of what we saw last year. And so, yeah, the sub $200 55-inch TV, which we're used to seeing on Black Friday in the last year or two, that's not going to happen this year. So similarly to waiting on that cell phone upgrade, if your TV is still working fine, it makes sense to hold off on that purchase for the time being as well. If you really, really want one, the best time, of course, every year is Black Friday or in January as we get closer to the Super Bowl, but prices just aren't going to be as favorable this year. Hopefully, who knows how long these supply chain issues last, but hopefully come next year, come this time next year, we're talking about a whole lot more normalcy and a lot of things getting back to the way they used to be.
That's right, man. Let's go ahead and shift gears for a second here and talk about student loans, which present a lot of problems for folks, but they are a necessity for many people to get a higher education. But that being said, the absolute worst form of student loans are going to be Parent PLUS loans. They completely suck. And the Wall Street Journal reports that Baylor University was steering parents in the direction of this, essentially like a ticking time bomb for these folks. The president of the university, they actually confessed that Baylor had been admitting students who couldn't afford to go to school there.
Yeah, and then the university was saying, but just take on these Parent PLUS loans and it'll be fine. And parents are like, student loans, I guess we'll do it. Student loans can't be all that bad. But Parent PLUS loans actually are all that bad.
That is true. Because of the interest rates, they're super high on these types of loans. And the fact that they don't have any caps is another huge downside to Parent PLUS loans. And so many of these parents are finding themselves just in a terrible position of taking on a ton more debt than they could handle in order to just ensure and to, you know, have their kids go to maybe the university of their dreams. So we're covering the story because even though Parent PLUS loans exist, it doesn't mean that parents should use them ever. And like we mentioned last week, we want you to prioritize going to a school that doesn't cost an arm and a leg, because community colleges are actually doing a great job and a lot of folks are getting fantastic jobs straight out of college because of the ways that community colleges are able to partner with a lot of local employers.
Yeah, and just because the federal government says, hey, here's access to loans, and just because a university says, you should take on those loans so your kid can go to school here, doesn't mean you should do it. And both of those institutions sound like institutions that you should trust, and they're probably speaking to your best interest, right? Well, no, as it turns out.
Not necessarily.
And you really have to watch your own back, and no matter how much you want your kid to go to that school or your kid wants to go to that school, if it means saddling yourself to hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of debt that is going to be nearly impossible or actually impossible for you to pay off, it's not worth it. And yeah, not to dissuade anyone from getting a college degree, but when it comes to avoiding student loans altogether, Matt, there's actually new data from Georgetown, and it reveals that a lot of non-college graduates are actually crushing it when it comes to their income. They found that more education, it doesn't always lead to more earning power. A big chunk of non-college graduates and associate's degree holders are actually making more than workers who hold a bachelor's degree.
Yeah, well, there's another stat in there too. Actually, did you see the one about bachelor degree holders earning more than master's and doctorate degrees?
That's right, yeah.
It's crazy. Like literally, so the stat was a quarter of folks with just a bachelor's degree are earning more than half of workers who happen to have a master's or a doctorate, which is kind of mind-blowing.
It is. And it just goes to show, not that higher education isn't a good thing, because when you look at the numbers overall, the higher level of education achieved, the larger the lifetime earnings.
Always.
In general, right?
Yes.
But when it comes down to specific individuals, there are a whole lot of people outkicking their coverage that you wouldn't have assumed, but it turns out that you don't have to have an expensive degree in order to make good money in the United States. And so we would say to check out the Occupational Outlook Handbook by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, because you can actually search by education level for the jobs that are in the highest demand and have the highest income possibilities. Skilled trades, we would say, don't get enough attention. It's something we do try to highlight on occasion here on How to Money, because there's a lot of opportunity for people who find themselves just less interested in pursuing college for their future, and who maybe are better working with their hands, who have an inclination towards a special skill. Those are the kind of people we want to say, don't try to be the square peg trying to fit in the round hole. Go in this other direction instead.
And you know, your square peg self.
Be the best square peg you can be. And in the end, there's a decent chance if you apply yourself that you will make more money than a lot of the people who did end up going to college.
Yeah, when you dig into some of the tools that they have there, I was surprised to see that there were over 40 jobs that were making at least $60,000 up to $80,000 every year with only a high school degree. And it was just a vast variety of different professions. And so I personally found that super encouraging for all the folks out there who just may not want to ever go to college.
Yeah, we just need to normalize that too, because I think it's fine for people that want to go to community college, for people that, you know, want to go to the fanciest private school. That's fine. But like each of those things, we're all different. And we all have different desires, different hopes, different strengths, different weaknesses. And college just, it's not one size fits all. And it shouldn't be. There are a whole lot of other paths out there for people to take. And it's just good to see that the ones that don't involve college, a lot of those people are succeeding too.
That's right. And that's going to be it for today's episode for our Friday Flight. We will have a fresh episode for you on Monday where we're going to be talking with Liz Frazier about how to go about raising financially savvy children. You can look forward to that one. We hope everyone has a great weekend. And Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.